Abraham and Canaan, part two. We're going to continue our study today, January 20th, 2023. We're on page 134, Patriarchs and Prophets by the Ellen G. White, chapter 12. For his religion, Abraham was not held as a precious treasure to be jealously guarded and enjoyed solely by the possessor. For the true religion cannot be thus held, for such a spirit is contrary unto the principle of the gospel. Okay, I don't like that word gospel, but that's the only word they have to use. They're talking about true religion. I like to use the word in the place of gospel. Let's read that again. I'll show you how I would do it. For the true religion cannot be thus held, for such a spirit is contrary unto the principle of the pure truth of the doctrine of for the salvation. For the pure truth for the doctrine of the salvation is the sanctuary system in full operation, showing you how you process your sin from outside the court. You come into the court with your lamb offering. You slay the lamb offering. You get his blood. The priest takes the blessed blood into the first part of the sanctuary, and he offers up on the horns of the altar of remission, the four horns, and the first apartment, and then he processes through the sanctuary to the second apartment on the Day of Atonement to get the Father to blot out the sins that that blood represents. That's your gospel. That's the gospel that they use, that they put the word gospel in the place of the sanctuary truth in operation for the processing of the sins of mankind to get them blotted out. So when you say gospel, you're not really telling the people what you're talking about. Okay? When you say religion, you're not telling the people on anything that they what you really mean. True religion. What's true religion? What's the true gospel? First, you got to understand what the gospel is. Gospel, simply put, represents the good news of the plan of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19 and 20. Through the new and living way, that is to say, through the veil, that is, in his blood. So, when you hear the word gospel, just translate in the understanding of the true teaching of the plan of the service, the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. Okay. While the Yahshua is dwelling in the heart, it is impossible for the concealing of the light of his presence, for that light to grow down. On the contrary, it will grow brighter and brighter as the day by day, for the mist of the selfishness and sin that envelop the soul are dispelled by the bright beams of the Sun of Righteousness. For the people of Yahweh are his representatives up on the earth. Okay? That's who we are today, this present tense representative. We have succeeded many righteous people, and I mean starting with Noah, the side of the flood. And he intends that they shall be lights in the moral darkness of this world, scattered all over the country and the towns, cities, and villages, for they are the Yahweh's witnesses as the channels under which he will communicate and will communicate for an unbelieving world the knowledge of his will and the wonders of his grace. It is his plan that all who are the partakers of the great salvation, good news of the plan of salvation, the resurrection coming of Yahshua, shall be I can't see that word. Missionary for him, for the pity of the Christian constitutes the standard by which the worldlings judge the gospel. For the child's patiently born blessing, gratefully receive meekness, kindness, mercy, and love, habitually exhibited are the lights that shine forth in the character before the world, revealing the contrast with the darkness that comes of the selfishness of the natural heart. Rich in the faith, noble in the generosity, unfaltering in the obedience, and humble in the simplicity of his pilgrim life, Abraham was also wise in the diplomacy and brave and skillful in the war. Notwithstanding, he was known as the teacher of a new religion. Three royal brothers, rulers of the Amorite plains in which he dwelt, manifested their friendship by inviting him to enter into an alliance with them for the greater security, for the country was filled with the violence and oppression. An occasion soon arose for him to avail himself of this alliance. For the child of Dolomir, king of the Elam, had invaded Canaan 14 years before and made it tributary unto him. Several of the princes now revolted, and the Elamite king, with the four allies, again marched into the country to reduce them to submission. Five kings of Canaan joined their forces and met the invaders in the Vale of Siddim, but only to be completely overthrown. For a large part of the army was cut to pieces, and those who escaped fled for the safety into the mountains, for the victors plundered the cities of the plain and departed with the rich spoil and many captives, among whom were the Lot and his family, the nephews of Abraham. They were Hebrews. Lot and his family were Hebrews, as Abraham was the first Hebrew to cross the river Euphrates into the land of Canaan. dwelling in the peace and the oak groves at Mamre, learned from one of the fugitives the story of the battle and the calamity that had befallen his nephew. He had cherished no unkind memory of the lot of the lost ingratitude. All his affection for him was awakened, and he determined that he should be rescued, seeking first of all of the divine counsel. Abraham prepared for the war. From his own encampment, he summoned 318 trained servants, men trained in the fear of the Yahweh, in the service of their master, and in the practice of the arms. His confederates, Mamre, Eshul, and Aner, joined him with their bands, and together they started in pursuit of the invaders. For the Elamites and their allies had encamped at Dan on the northern border of the Canaan. Blessed with the victory and having no fear of an assault from their vanquished foes, they had given themselves up to revelry. For the patriarch Abraham divided his force so as to approach from the different directions and came upon the encampment by the night. His attack so vigorous and unexpected resulted in a speedy victory, for the king of the Elam was slain, and his panic-stricken horses were utterly routed. Lot and his family, with all the prisoners and their goods, were recovered, and a rich booty fell into the hands of the victors. Under Abraham, with Yahweh, for the triumph was due. For the worshiper of the Yahweh had not only rendered of a great service unto the country, but had proved himself as a man of the valor. For it was seen that the righteousness is not For it was seen that the righteousness is not with the cowardice, and that the Abraham's religion made him courageous in the maintaining of the right and defending the oppressed, for his heroic act gave him a widespread influence among the surrounding tribes. On his return, the king of the Sodom came out with his retinue for the honor of the conqueror, for he bade him take the goods, begging only that the prisoners should be restored. By the usage of the war, the spoils belonged unto the conquerors. Brother Abraham had undertaken this expedition with no purpose of the gain, and he refused to take advantage of the unfortunate only stipulating that his confederates should receive the portion under which they were entitled. Few, if subjected to such a test, would have shown themselves as noble as did Abraham. Few would have resisted the temptation to secure so rich a booty, for his example is a rebuke unto self-seeking mercenary spirits. But Abraham regarded the claims of the justice and humanity, for his conduct illustrates the inspired maxim, shalt love thy neighbor, that verse says, neighbor as thyself, I have lifted up my hand, he said, unto the Yahweh, as the Most High Yahweh, as the possessor of the heaven and of the earth, and that I will not take from a thread, even for a shoe lesson, and that I will not take anything that is thine. Thus thou shouldest say, I have made Abraham rich, for he would give them no occasion to think that he had engaged in warfare for the sake of the gain, or for the attributing of his prosperity, for their gifts or favor. For the Yahweh had promised to bless Abraham, and to him the glory should be ascribed. For another who came out to welcome the victorious patriarch was the Melchizedek, king of the Salem. And guess who that was? That was Joshua, the son of Yahweh himself. And Joshua, here he was on earth, posing as a man named Melchizedek, king of Salem. And what is Salem today? It had a Yahweh's name put on the front of it, the name Salem, after David conquered Salem. And David says, it will be called Jerusalem. And so originally in the Hebrew it was spelled Y-H-U-R-U-S-A-L-A-M. It has 10 letters to the name Jerusalem when you put Yahweh's name on the front of Salem. Y-H-U-S-A-L-A-M. Okay. So it says, for another who came out for the welcoming of the victorious patriarch was the son of Yahweh, Yeshua, posing as a Melchizedek, king of the Salem. And when David, years later, conquered Salem, what did he do? He called it Jerusalem, and it's still called Jerusalem today, except transliterated by the English into Jerusalem, giving it 9 letters, where it originally, with Yahweh's name on the front, spelled in the Hebrew, is 10 letters transliterated. Y-H-U. Okay. Who brought forth bread and wine for the refreshment of his army. As a priest of the Most High Yahweh, Melchizedek, he pronounced a blessing upon Abraham and gave thanks unto the Yahweh who had wrought so great a deliverance by his servant, and Abraham gave him tithes of all. There it is. Abraham paid tithes in Melchizedek. Mm-hmm. Abraham gladly returned to his tents and his flocks, but his mind was disturbed by the harassing thoughts. He had been a man of the peace so far as possible, shunning enmity and strife, and with the horror he recalled the scene of the carnage he had witnessed. But the nation whose forces he had defeated would doubtless renew the invasion of the Canaan and make him the special object of their vengeance. Becoming thus involved in the national quarrel, the peaceful quiet of his life would be broken. Furthermore, he had not entered upon the possession of the king, nor could he now hope for an heir unto whom the promise might be fulfilled. In a vision of the night, the divine voice was again heard. "Fear not, Abraham," were the words of the princes, "for I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." But his mind was so oppressed by the foreboding that he could not now grasp the promise with the unquestioning confidence as hitherto before. For he prayed for some tangible evidence that it would be fulfilled. And how was the covenant promise to be realized? Or the gift of a son was withheld? "What wilt thou give me?" he said, "seeing I go childless, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir." For he proposed to make his trusty servant Eliezer as his son by the adoption and the inheritor of his possessions, but he was assured that a child of his own was to be his heir. Then he was led outside his tent and told to look up unto the unnumbered stars glittering in the heavens, and as he did so, the words were spoken, "So shall thy seed be," for the Abraham believed Yahweh, and it was counted unto him for the righteousness, Romans 4:3. Now I can read his better. This is a clean copy. This is better. But I can still read this better.
Yeah, the pages are wider.
Because it's wider.
Yeah, it's wider.
It's all right. Leave it alone. Thank you very much, though. I will use this after. I'll use it. This is good. I can see it, too. It's a better book, too. That's what I had. Alright, I don't know where I left off.
Still the patriarchs. You started here.
I just started right here?
Yeah, you started there, but then you went down and stopped.
How far did I go down?
Maybe it's where the Yahweh consented.
Down in here?
Yeah, you're here.
Right here. Okay, okay. Yeah. For the Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, as the Melchizedek condescended to enter into a covenant with his servant, employing such forms as were customary among men for the ratification of a solemn engagement. By the divine direction, Abraham sacrificed a heifer, a she-goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, dividing the bodies and laying the pieces a little distance apart. To these he added a turtle dove and a young pigeon, which, however, were not divided. For this being done, he reverently passed between the parts of the sacrifice, making a solemn vow on the Yahweh of the perpetual obedience, watchful and steadfast. He remained beside the carcasses till the going down of the sun to guard them from being defiled or devoured by the birds of prey. About the sunset, he sank into a deep sleep, and lo, a horror of the great darkness fell upon him, and the voice of Yahweh was heard, bidding him not to expect the immediate possession of the promised land, and pointing forward unto the sufferings of his posterity before their establishment in the Canaan. The plan of the redemption was here opened up unto him. And the death of Yahshua, a great sacrifice, and his coming in the glory, Abraham saw also the earth restored unto its Eden beauty. Now this is, we're in that time now. We're in the time for that future restoration, and Yahweh has placed us in charge of the beginning of the announcing of this good news, that we're in the beginning now for the restoration. And how do we do that? First, Yahshua has to come and destroy all the wicked that he's in the process of doing right now with the COVID-19 injections and all this other stuff. He's going to clean the earth of all the rottenness and all the filth of the wicked and them with it. And then we have to come in, the righteous come in behind and restore this earth back to the former image of the Garden of Eden, to prove to the wicked of the world that he meant what he said, that he's going to give them 6,000 years to do their dirty work, and then at the end of 6,000 years he's going to come again and restore this earth back into its rightful order with his servants, and in the sight of the heathen that are left round about, and to show. And it says, so that his name might be sanctified in the eyes of the midst of the heathen, he's going to cause this to happen. So we've got quite a bit of time left in front of us, folks. So he's going to restore the earth back to its Eden beauty to be given him for an inheritance. I'm just going to lightly underline that word, restored. To give him for an everlasting possession as the final and complete fulfillment of the promise. And so you might now you might just go put Matthew chapter 8. Verse 11. Okay. As a pledge of that, of this covenant of Yahweh with the man, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp, symbols of the divine presence that pass between the severed victims, totally consuming them. And again, a voice from voices heard from Abraham, confirming the gift of the land of Canaan unto his descendants. That's who we are, folks. From the river of the Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. There's that original boundary line that Abraham was told to cross over this river. And right north of Shechem and in the land of Canaan. When Abraham had been nearly 25 years in the Canaan, Yahweh appeared unto him and said, I am the Almighty Yahweh. Walk before me and be thou perfect. And all the patriarchs fell upon his face, and the message continued. Behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of the many nations. And when, and the token of this fulfillment of this covenant, his name heretofore called Abram, was changed unto the name Abraham, signifying as the father of a great nation. For the Sarah's name became became Sarah, princess. For said the divine voice, she shall be a mother of the nation, kings of the people shall be of her. At this time the rite of the circumcision was given unto Abraham as a seal of the righteousness of the faith that he had yet been uncircumcised. In this strange, when I was born, my mother didn't have me circumcised. She didn't know to. At the age of 48, I was circumcised. And when I was circumcised, within an hour, I was healed of my circumcision. All the pain and everything just went away as if nothing had ever happened within an hour after I was circumcised. Yahweh says, that's a token that I have accepted this circumcision to set you aside for a great leadership. So at the age of 48, I received that. Okay. So that was a long time ago. Okay, so at this time the rite of the circumcision was given unto Abraham as a seal of the righteousness of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant that he had yet been uncircumcised, Romans 4:11. For it was to be observed by the patriarch and his descendants as a token that they were devoted unto the service of Yahweh and that separated from the idolaters. I love it. I love it. I love it. I prefer just a pencil line underneath idolaters there. And that Yahweh accepted them as his peculiar treasure. Okay. by this rite they were placed for the fulfilling on their part as the conditions of their covenant made with the Abraham. They were not to contract marriages with the heathen, for by their so doing they would lose their reverence for Yahweh and His holy law, for they would be tempted for the engaging in the sinful practices of the other nations and would be seduced into the idolatry. That's the reason why I make the point today that we don't go and worship and eat with them. We can worship with them by phone, and that's all. For the Yahweh conferred the great honor upon the Abraham. Angels of the heavens walked and talked with him as a friend with friend. When the judgment were about to be visited upon the Sodom, the fact was not hidden from him, and he became an intercessor with the Yahweh for the sinners. For his interview with the angel presents also a beautiful example of the hospitality. In the hot summer noontide, the patriarch was sitting in his tent door, looking out over the unique landscape, when he saw in the distance three travelers approaching. Before they reached his tent, the strangers halted as if consulting as to their course. Without their waiting for them to solicit favors, Abraham rose quickly, and as they were apparently turning in another direction, he hastened unto them and with the utmost courtesy urged them to honor him by the chairing for the refreshment. With his own hands he brought water that they might wash the dust of the travel from their feet. He himself selected their food, and while they were at rest under the cooling shade and entertainment was made ready, and he stood respectfully beside them while they partook of his hospitality. For this act of the courtesy, Yahweh regarded as a sufficient important to record in His Word, and 1,000 years later it was referred to by an inspired apostle: "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." Hebrews 13:2. Abraham has seen in his guest only three tired wayfarers, little thinking that among them was one whom he might worship without sin. But the true character of the heavenly messengers was now revealed. Though they were on their way as the ministers of the wrath, yet unto Abraham, the man of the faith, they spoke first of the blessing. For the Yahweh is strict for the marking iniquity and for the punishing of the transgression, for he takes no delight in the vengeance, for the work of the destruction is as a strange work unto him, whom is infinite in the love, for the secret of the Yahweh is with them that fear him. Psalms 25:14. Abraham had honored the Yahweh, and the Yahweh honored him, taking him into his counsel and revealing unto him his purposes. Shall I hide from the Abraham that thing which I do, said the Yahweh. For the cause of Solomon Tamar is great, and became their sin and the very grievous. I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it which has come unto me, and if not, I will know. For Yahweh knew well about the measure of the Sodom's guilt, that he expressed himself after the manner of the men, that the justice of the dealings might be understood. Before the bringing of the judgment upon the transgressors, for he would go himself to the institute and examination of their course if they had not passed the limits of the divine mercy. He would still grant them a space for repentance. Two of the heavenly messengers departed, leaving Abraham alone with him whom he now knew to be the son of Abraham and a man of the faith. Or to be the son of Yahweh. Yeah, let's do that again. Two of the heavenly messengers departed, leaving Abraham alone with him, and that would be Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, whom he now knew to be the son of the Yahweh, and a man of the faith that is with the pleading for the inhabitants of the Sodom. Once he had saved them by his sword, and now he is with the endeavoring for the saving of them by prayer. Let Lot and his household were still dwellers there, and the unselfish love that prompted Abraham for the rescue from the Elamites now sought to save them, if it were the Yahweh's will, from the storm of the divine judgment. With a deep reverence and humility, he urged his plea. I have taken upon me to speak unto the Yahshua, the Son, which am but dust and ashes. There was no self-confidence, no boasting of his own righteousness, for he did not claim favor on the ground of his obedience or of the sacrifices he had made during the Yahshua's will, made in the doing of the Yahweh's will. Himself a sinner, he pleaded in the sinner's behalf. Now, I'm going to correct this here. Ellen G. White took it upon herself to say that Abraham is a sinner here, but that is wrong, wrong, wrong. Abraham knew he was no sinner. Abraham had already told by Yahweh that he was a very righteous man, perfect and upright. That's the reason he chose him to be the father of many nations. So I want to change that word sinner. For he did claim favor on the ground of his obedience, or of the sacrifices he had made during the Yahweh's will, for himself, being a non-sinner, yet he pleaded in the sinner's behalf. Now this is the correct way that should read. For Abraham, you know, was declared righteous a long time ago by Yahweh himself, when he made a covenant with Abraham that he would be the father of many nations because of his pure righteousness. Abraham was not a sinner. Such a He may have been one time, but he is not now. Such a spirit all who approach salvation should possess. Yet Abraham manifested the confidence of a child pleading with a loved father, for he came close unto the heavenly messenger and fervently urged his petition. Though the Lord had become a dweller in the Sodom, he did not partake in the iniquity of its inhabitants. But Abraham thought in that that populous city there must be other worshippers of the true Yahweh. And in the view of this, he said, that be far from thee to do after the manner for the slain of the righteous with the wicked. You see? So anytime that you say, Abraham said he was a sinner, he knew he was a sinner. Well, how could he contend then with that angel to spare the righteous with Sodom if there's any righteous down there? Okay. That be far from thee, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? So he's recognizing Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, as the judge of all the earth. For the Abraham asked not once merely, but many times. Waxing bolder as his request was granted, he continued until he gained the assurance that if even 10 righteous persons could be found in it, the city would be spared. Love for the perishing souls inspired Abraham's prayer. While he loathed the sins of that corrupt city, he desired that the sinners might be saved. For his deep interest for the Sodom shows the anxiety that he should feel for the impenitent. We should cherish hatred of the sin, but pity and love for the sinner. That's what Abraham did. All around us are souls going down unto the ruin as the hopeless, as terrible as that which befell Sodom. Every day the probation of some is closing. Every hour some are passing beyond the reach of mercy. And there are the voices of the warning and entreaty for the bidding of the sinner flee from this fearful doom. Where are the hands of the stretched out to draw him back from the dead? Where are those who with humility and persevering faith are pleading with the Yahweh for him? For the spirit of Abraham was the spirit of the Yahshua, for the son of the Yahweh and himself as the great intercessor in the sinner's behalf, he who had paid the price for its redemption knows the worth of the human soul. With an antagonism to evil, such as can exist only in a nature spotlessly pure, for the Yahshua manifested toward the sinner a love of which the infinite goodness alone could conceive. In the agonies of the crucifixion himself, burdened with the awful weight of the sins of the whole world. He prayed for his revilers and murderers. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Luke 23:34. Of Abraham it is written that he was called the friend of the other. For the father of all them that believe, James 2:23, Romans 4:11. For the testimony of Yahweh concerning the faithful patriarch is, Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And again I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him. And they shall keep the way of Yahweh to do justice and judgment, that Yahweh may bring upon Abraham that which he had spoken of him. It was a high honor unto which Abraham was called, that as being the father of the people, who for the century were the guardians and preservers of the truth of Yahweh, for the world of that people, though through whom all the nations of the earth should be blessed, and the advent of the promised Messiah. He who had called the patriarch judged him worthy. For it is Yahweh that speaks, for he who understands the thoughts of all and places the right estimate upon men said, I know him. There would be on the part of Abraham no betraying of the truth for the selfish purposes, for he would keep the law of the sanctuary 100%. That's found in Leviticus 23:1-44, starting with the seventh day Sabbath, and deal justly and righteously. And he would not only fear the Yahweh, Yahshua himself, the Son, but he would cultivate the present truth, meet in due season, manna from heaven in his home on a daily basis. For he would instruct his family in their righteousness, for the law of the sanctuary in the full operation, for the law of the sanctuary of the Yahweh, the Father, would be the rule in his household. For the Abraham's household comprised more than 1,000 souls. Oh my. Those who were led by his teachings for the worshiping of the one Yahweh found a home in his enchantment, and here as in a school they received such instruction as would prepare them to be representatives of the true faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant that Abraham enjoined. Thus a great responsibility rested upon him, for he was training heads of the family, and his method of the government would be carried out in the household over which they should preside. In the early times, the father was the ruler and priest of his own family, and he exercised authority over his children, even after they had families of their own. For his descendants were taught to look up unto him as their head in the most religious and secular matters. By this patriarchal system of the government, Abraham endeavored to perpetuate as it tended to preserve the knowledge of the Yahweh. It was necessary for the binding of the members of the household together in the order for the building up a barrier against the idolatry that had become so widespread and so deep-seated, for the Abraham thought he sought by the every man in his power for the guardian of the inmate of his enchantment against the mingling with the heathen and witnessing their idolatrous practices, for he knew that the familiarity with the evil would insensibly corrupt the principle, for the greatest care was exercised by setting out every form of the false religion and for the impression of the mind with the majesty and glory of the living Yahweh and the Trinity, of the living Yahshua, the Son of the Yahweh, as the true object of the worship. Okay. For it was a wise arrangement that the Yahweh himself had made, and for the cutting off of his people so far as possible from the connection with the heathen, making them a people dwelling alone and not reckoned among the nations. For he had separated Abraham from the idolatrous kindred, that the patriarch might train and educate his family apart from the seductive influences that would have surrounded them in the Mesopotamia, and that the true faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant might be preserved in its purity by his descendants from generation to generation. And we are indeed one of the last generations of Abraham and his seed today. Abraham being our ancestor. For the Abraham's affection for his children and his household led him to, for the guardian of their religious faith, for the imparting unto them a knowledge of the divine statutes as the most precious legacy that he could transmit unto them and through them and to the world. All were taught that they were within the rule of the Yahweh of the heaven, for there was to be no oppression on the part of the parents and no disobedience on the part of the children. The Yahweh's law had appointed unto each his duty, and only in the obedience he could could any secure happiness or prosperity. Okay. For his own example, the solemn influence of his daily life was a constant lesson for the unswerving integrity with the benevolence and unselfish courtesy that had won the admiration of the king were displayed in the home. For there was a fragrance about the life and nobility and loveliness about the character that reveal unto all that he was connected with the heaven. For he did not exalt the soul of the humblest servant. In his household there was not one law for the master and another for the servant, a royal way for the rich and another for the poor. All were treated with the justice and compassion as the inheritors with him of the grace of life. For he will command his household, there would be no sinful neglect for the restraining of the evil propensities of his children. No weak, unwise indulgence, favoritism, no yielding of his conviction of the duty and for the claims of the mistaken affection. For the Abraham would not only give that instruction, really he would maintain the authority of the just and righteous laws. How few there are in our day who follow this example on the part of the too many parents. There is a blind and selfish sentimentalism, miscalled love, which is manifested in the leaving of the children with their unformed judgment and undisciplined passion for the control of their own will. For this is the various cruelty unto the youth and a great wrong unto the world. For the parental indulgence ensues disorder in the families and in the society. For it confirms in the young the desire for the following of the inclination instead of the submitting unto the divine requirement. Thus they grew up with a heart adverse for the doing of Yahweh's will, and they transmit their irreligious and subordinate spirit unto their children and children's children, like the Abraham's parents should command their household after them, that obedience unto the parental authority be taught and enforced as the first step in the obedience unto the authority of the Yahweh. This brings in verse 10. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour, calling us number 11, click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
Work for the night is coming.
Work for the night is coming, but through the morning hours. Work for the dew is sparkling, work mid springing flowers. Work for the day grows brighter under the glowing sun. Work for the night is coming and man's work is done. Work for the night is coming, work through the Sunday noon. Fill brightest hours with labor, rest comes sure and soon. Give every flying matter something to keep in store. Look for the night is coming when man's work no more. Look for the night is coming
tents are glowing.
Work for daylight light. Work till the last in faded to shine no more. Work for the night.